The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 12, text number 1. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari. Recorded on April 20th, 2013, in Vrindavan, India.
So today we continue our study of the words of God, the song of God, which liberates us from all anxieties of this material existence. Chapter 12, text number 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Arjuna Uvacha. Evam Satata Yukta Ye Bhakta Svam Prayupasate Ye Cha Api Aksharam Avyaktam Tesham Ke Yogavittama Arjuna Uvacha Evam Satata Yuktaye Bhaktastvam Paryapasate Yechapyaksharam Avyaktam Teshanke Yogavittama Arjuna Uvacha Evam Satata Yuktaye Bhaktastvam Paryapasate Yechapyaksharam Avyaktam Teshanke Yogavittama. Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna said, Evam, thus, Satata, always, Yukta, engaged, Ye, those who, Bhakta, devotees, Tvam, you, Payaphasate, properly worship, Ye, those who, Cha, also, Api, again, Aksharam, beyond the senses, Avyaktam, the unmanifested, Tesham, of them, Ke, who, Yogavittama, the most perfect in the yoga of knowledge. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? Purport. Krishna has now explained about the personal, the impersonal, and the universal, and has described all kinds of devotees and yogis. Generally, the transcendentalists can be divided into two classes. One is the impersonalist, and the other is the personalist. The personalist devotee engages himself with all energy in the service of the Supreme Lord. The impersonalist also engages himself not directly in the service of the Lord, but in meditation on the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested. We find in this chapter that of the different processes for realization of the Absolute Truth, Bhakti yoga devotional service is the highest. If one at all desires to have the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he must take the devotional service. Those who worship the Supreme Lord directly by devotional service are called personalists. Those who engage themselves in meditation on the impersonal Brahman are called impersonalists. Arjuna is here questioning which position is better. There are different ways to realize the absolute truth, but Krishna indicates in this chapter that bhakti yoga or devotional service to him is the highest of all. It is the most direct and it is the easiest means for association with the Godhead. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord explained that a living being is not the material body, he is a spiritual spark. And the absolute truth is the spiritual whole. In the seventh chapter, he spoke of the living entity as being part and parcel of the supreme whole and recommended that he transfer his attention fully to the whole. Then again in the eighth chapter, it was said that anyone who thinks of Krishna at the time of quitting his body is at once transferred to the spiritual sky, to the abode of Krishna. And at the end of the sixth chapter, the Lord clearly said that of all the yogis, one who always thinks of Krishna within himself is considered the most perfect. So in practically every chapter, the conclusion has been that one should be attached to the personal form of Krishna, for that is the highest spiritual realization. Nevertheless, there are those who are not attached to the impersonal form of Krishna. They are so firmly detached that even in the preparation of commentaries to Bhagavad Gita, they want to distract other people from Krishna and transfer all devotion to the impersonal Brahmajyoti. They prefer to meditate on the impersonal form of the Absolute Truth, which is beyond the reach of the senses and is not manifest. And so, actually, there are two classes of transcendentalists. Now, Arjuna is trying to settle the question of which process is easier and which of the classes is most perfect. In other words, he is clarifying his own position because he is attached to the personal form of Krishna. He is not attached to the impersonal Brahman. He wants to know whether his position is secure. The impersonal manifestation, either in this material world or in the spiritual world of the Supreme Lord, is a problem for meditation. Actually, one cannot perfectly conceive of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, Arjuna wants to say, what is the use of such a waste of time? Arjuna experienced in the 11th chapter that to be attached to the personal form of Krishna is best because he could thus understand all other forms at the same time, and there was no disturbance to his love for Krishna. The important question asked of Krishna by Arjuna will clarify the distinction between the impersonal and personal conception of the Absolute Truth. Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Jitapada Kamalam, Sri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha, Sri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sijivam, Sadaitam Sapadutam Bharijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladisha Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Paristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamini Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desha Tadine. Paschacha means Western. Desha means countries. Tarine means delivering. From what? From Nirvishesha and Shunyavadi. Impersonalism and voidism. So is this some new idea dreamed up by Srila Prabhupada to distinguish between personalism and impersonalism? Now it's quite clear. Krishna is very clearly Arjuna, actually very clearly distinguishing. In other words, Shankaracharya did not invent the impersonal philosophy. It was already existing even before this Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Simply, Shankaracharya popularized it at that time in India and used it as a device to re-establish Vedic culture, a semi-version of Vedic culture for defeating Buddhism. Another very nice point here, it's very difficult to meditate on something impersonal. I mean, how can you love the impersonal, you know? It has no form, it has no qualities, it has no features, there's nothing there to relate to. It's like, and they have arranged marriages in India, you know, the parents tell their son, well, we got your wife for, you know, come and dedicate your whole life, and she has no form, she has no name, she has no qualities. And you have to love her, you see. But mom and dad, how I can't see her, I can't talk to her, she has no form, she has no name, she has no activities. How can I possibly love her? She's not a person, you see. So, it's a very practical thing. I mean, of course, the impersonalists, they don't say you have to love God. That's their philosophy, is to be God. Is it? Don't worry about trying to love Him, just be God again. When I was beginning my quest for a spiritual enlightenment back in the 60s in Austin, Texas, I didn't know where to turn, but I heard there were some yogis in India had become enlightened, and you could also become enlightened. So I was trying to read some books about it, and I got a hold of one book which claimed to tell me how to become enlightened. It was called The Book. The Book was the name of the book. And it was subtitled On the Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are. So in this book, the author proceeded to tell us that actually, you are God. Guess what? You're God. But you're just playing hide-and-go-seek with yourself. Come out of hiding and be God again. So I tried it for a few days. I was feeling pretty good for a few days. Wow. But after a while, it became very clear that I wasn't, things weren't going my way. Obviously, I wasn't God. It's a little I am God bubble burst. Like a kid, you know, blowing up a bubble, you know, and being all fascinated by his bubble, and pop, it's finished. You see? So Mr. Alan Watts, he blew up this bubble for me that I was God, but then the bubble burst. You see? So this impersonal idea that actually, you know, you are God, you just forgot about it, now you just have to do some yoga or do some meditation or do some mental speculation, you know, and realize that you're God. It's ridiculous. And even to achieve that genuine state of Brahman realization, it's stated in the Brahma Samhita, it takes thousands and millions of years of meditating on the impersonal Brahman philosophy, you know, the neti-neti process. It takes thousands and millions of years to actually merge into Brahman. So what's the point of spending so many thousands and millions of lifetimes to finally achieve some position which Bhagavatam says, patanti adho, they fell down from it. It's such a big endeavor to achieve something which has no substance. I am God. I am Brahman. The difficulty is, it's very attractive. Somebody, you know, has been trying to make it in the material world. They couldn't make it academically. They flunked out of school. Well, they started a rock band. That didn't work. Nobody could stand their music. Then he went out for sports. He couldn't do that. You know, he tried politics. He failed in every way. But then he found out in personal philosophy. Now he could finally make it. Yeah, now I'm God. I couldn't make it. Now I finally made it. I finally hit the big time. I didn't have a number one hit on the top 40. I didn't become a millionaire. I didn't become a star quarterback. for the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't achieve any big position, but now I finally got it. I'm one up on everybody. I'm God, you see. So it's attractive for a materialistic person. It's very attractive philosophy, and people fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. I know. I found on the internet somebody was glorifying their impersonalist guru. They really thought he was great. We say Aham Brahmasmi, it means I'm spirit soul. When the impersonalists say Aham Brahmasmi, they're saying, I am God. When they say Tatvamasmi, they're not saying you are spirit soul, they're saying you are God. So this person was glorifying his spiritual master. He said, he doesn't say Aham Brahmasmi, I am God. He only says, Tatvamasmi, you are all God. So just see what a humble, great, realized soul he is. He's so humble, he never says that he's God. He only tells us that we are God. So people fall for this garbage. They fall for it like anything. And so how do you get out of that trap? If you get caught, in that trap, it's called the last snare of illusion. How do you get out of the trap of Mayavadi philosophy? It's a very, very dangerous trap to fall into. It's like they catch the elephants, you know, in a pit. So it's a pit to get caught in Mayavadi philosophy. Lord Chaitanya very stringently warned against it. Mayavadi basha shune loi hoi sarvanash. If you take to an understanding of Mayavadi philosophy, your spiritual life is finished. You are doomed. Everything is finished. Hoi sarvanash. Everything is finished for you. It's all over. You fall into Mayavadi philosophy, you're finished. It's a very, very dangerous position. But Prabhupada was so powerful, so inconceivably powerful, with the potency of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who converted Prakashananda Sarasvati and his 30,000 disciples from Mayavadi to Vaishnava. Prabhupada had the same shakti of Gauranga to convert those Mayavadis. He converted so many hippies. Hippie means Mayavadi, actually. We were all hippie philosophy is Mayavadi philosophy. There were so many incarnations of God walking up and down Haight Street, you see. It was very common philosophy among the hippies, I'm God. The yogis were telling us, and we believed, I'm God, you're God, we're all God, you see. I went to one popular guru, I remember, in San Francisco back in 69, and he said, we're all avatars. So, the great potency of Srila Prabhupada, that he was able to liberate so many Mayavadis from the illusion. I remember one of my godbrothers at 26 Second Avenue. I told this the other day. You weren't all here at that time. He said Swamiji was always talking about the Mayavadis, like some rival sect of Hinduism. But then why is he always bashing these Mayavadis? But then he realized, actually, we are the Mayavadis because we've all accepted this philosophy and Prabhupada defeating it, you see. So it's very amazing how the profundity of some of Prabhupada's arguments. I was serving in Gainesville, Florida with one of the most powerful debaters of our movement at the time, Amarendra Prabhu. Later on, I went to become the attorney fighting for book distribution in the airports. But he's a very powerful fighter. And he would debate with... He used to debate on the campus. We'd have a lunch program. The University of Florida Food for Life program was started originally by Gargamuni, but then it closed down for some time, and then Amarendra sent me out there to start the program up again in 73. And he would also come out and debate. He was so powerful in debate. When he would start debating with somebody, 300 students would come. Huge. There's even a photograph. I have a photograph of him. He's sitting there debating with some student. He was so dynamic in argument that huge crowds of students would come to hear. So he was really into this, all of the arguments that can be used. So he was wondering, he came across one argument, he didn't know what to say. At that time in the college campuses, you know, everybody was an incarnation of God. All the long-haired hippies were incarnations of God. They would come up to you and they would say, "I'm God." And that was the hip thing on the college campuses in the early 70s in the U.S. At least the major universities, you know. University of Florida, et cetera, University of Texas, the big campuses. Berkeley, you know. University of California, Berkeley. So, anyway, he went to Chicago and he asked Srila Prabhupada this question. He said, "Srila Prabhupada, what if they argue that they say I am God, and we say, but then why are you suffering in this material world if you're God? What, Srila Prabhupada, what if they say this is my pastime? I am God, but my being caught up here in the cycle is simply my lila. To be caught up here in the cycle of birth and death, what should we say, Prabhupada?" And Prabhupada answered in the most wonderful way. He said, "Tell them this, that you are God, and this is your pastime to be in the material world. I accept that. But I am also God, and my pastime is to kick you in the face." Prabhupada was really into defeating Mayavadi philosophy. You could see he was really into the... No matter what argument a Mayavadi could say, Prabhupada had to defeat it. Prabhupada was the most expert defeater of Mayavadi philosophy. And anybody who seriously takes to study these books, they'll be convinced. They'll be convinced. You see... Especially in the Western, like in the U.S., people come out of the Judeo-Christian culture. And people are a little disgusted with the idea of, God and, the big cop in the sky who will zap you with a thunderbolt if you don't eat your spinach tonight, little Johnny. Like that, you know. People are disgusted with that conception of God. So, when they hear about Mayavadi philosophy, they say, "Oh, very nice. A God who doesn't mess with me, he lets me do what I want to do," you see. So they get attracted to him. Or even atheists can get attracted. "Well, I don't believe in God, but if I told you that you were God, could you maybe even think you could believe in God?" "Oh, if I can be God, yeah, I can believe in God." So Mayavadi philosophy has its attractions. But ultimately, it fails because there's no relationships. Prabhupada always said, love means two, Krishna and you. Sometimes it is said, "I don't want to live in a world without love." So Mayavadi philosophy ultimately is loveless. It denies loving relationships. And people take to that philosophy because they're frustrated by loving relationships. "Don't speak of love. I've heard that word before," one writer wrote. It's sleeping in my memory. But I've heard that word. "Don't disturb the thoughts of feelings that have died. If I never loved, I never would have cried." You see, they want to deny it. So in the material world, we are frustrated by love. It's a thing. "I gave my love to this person. I was let down. My best friend dumped me. My girlfriend, my boyfriend, my spouse, they just dump me. You see, people get frustrated. But Krishna is the perfect lover. That need we have for loving relationships becomes fully gratified, fully satisfied with that amazing, all-powerful, all-beautiful, fully renounced, unbelievably knowledgeable, fabulously rich, superbly famous person named Krishna. One of the most amazing things about Krishna is that you get to have your own Krishna. Just like the queens in Dwarka. Each one of them had her own Krishna. She didn't have to share Krishna with the other queens. She had her own private Krishna. So actually, Krishna has a intimate, totally devoted, intimate relationship with each and every one of his devotees. We get to have Krishna fully. We don't have to wait 10 million years to have a 5-second darshan like in Tirupati. When you go for the darshan, you know, you get to stand in this huge queue for hours and they're here, move on, you see. Chokidar is telling you, move, come on, move, move, move. Move. I've been waiting for hours, no, move. It's not like that with Krishna, you see. Krishna fully gives himself, you see, to his devotees. In a completely personal, totally, unbelievably sweet, relishable way. So, give Krishna a try. That's all we're really saying. You tried everything else, you know. You tried being a Brahma, you tried being Indra. You tried being an Indra Gopa germ, you've tried being a rock star, a leper, a sweeper in the street, a woman, a man, an orangutan. You've tried being everything and you never were happy. So why not just give one life, give your love completely to Krishna and see what the result is. And if you don't like it, you can always take birth again in the material world. No one can, you know. Just make this experiment. If you have any tendency at all to gamble, just put one life on the gambling table. I'm going to give this one life completely to Krishna. I'm going to give up any thought of anything else. I'm just going to say, Krishna, I'm yours. Do what you want to with me. I don't care. I'll go anywhere. I'll do anything. I'll do whatever you want. My every thought, my every word, my every deed in all times, all places and circumstances, 24/7, from now and for the rest of my life is completely for you.
Are you nuts?
Huh?
Are you nuts? Are you nuts?
Yes, I'm nuts. I'm completely nuts. About Krishna? Well, I'm trying to be nuts. Actually, I'm not as nutty as I want to be.
The way to chart is that I wish I had some of that.
Huh?
Advaitacharya said about Lord Chaitanya, I wish I had some of that disease.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be nuts. I'm not nutty enough about Krishna, really. I don't have enough. I'm trying to become a completely Krishnaized nut. I'm not there yet. Transcendental madman, that's my goal. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is hankering for that day in his song, Kabhi Habhi Bola Se Dimanma. He says, When on the bank of the Ganges at Navadvip will I run and shout Gornitananda, half in a state half mad of mind, when oh when will that day be mine? So I'm hankering for that day when I can become like a transcendental madman. Now I'm still thinking I have some semblance of sanity. I'm hoping someday I can become a complete madman. Like Lord Chaitanya, that mood of Lord Chaitanya described in the Shikshastakam. That's a wonderful mood to hanker for, you know. Completely divinely intoxicated person with love of God. Now I'm still thinking about eating and sleeping, you see. When time is prasadam, you know. When can I go to sleep? You see. But one becomes a liberated soul, there's no question. Eating and sleeping just somehow happen in the middle of your divine ecstasy. So the only way you can enter into this enlightened, enlivened, transcendental state of consciousness is the personal conception. And personal Brahman realization is called Nirvana, sometimes described as Nirvana in the Bhagavatam. There's a term given also, Nirvana Vilambitani. Bhakti is that which minimizes the value of impersonal liberation. And it's also described that impersonal liberation is called Vimukti Maninas, which means it's liberation in the mind only. They are not actually liberated. They just think they're liberated, but they're not really liberated. A mundane example is many years ago when I was in our Dallas temple, we're talking 72. We just moved into we just relocated from Turtle Creek Boulevard to Gurley Avenue. The temple room was still like the basketball court in those days, pretty simple. And there was a low security prison about 30 miles east, maybe 20 miles east of Dallas on Interstate 30. And they called, one of the inmates wanted to come for the Sunday feast. So he got a special pass to come for the Sunday feast. And I went and picked him up, he came to the feast, he had a great time, I drove him back. So he was out of the prison, but he wasn't really liberated. So the Mayavadi is kind of like having a weekend pass. He gets a little temporary pass to get a kind of a sneak preview of what the spiritual world is like. He's not allowed shelter there, but he can kind of be in it, that atmosphere, a little bit, and then zip back into the cycle of breath and death again. So he has a weekend pass from the cycle of breath and death, but then his time is up and he has to go back into karma chakra again. So why endeavor for some temporary, semi-escape from the sufferings of material existence? As we study in the Sri Upanishad, the three qualities of spiritual enlightenment, Satchidananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss, the Mayavadi only experiences the first one, which is Sat. He doesn't get shit, he doesn't get knowledge, he doesn't get Ananda, which is bliss. He only gets Sat. He only achieves a sense of his eternal identity for some period of time before he loses it again. He doesn't actually get spiritual knowledge, nor does he get spiritual bliss. So why waste time with this impersonal philosophy? You see? It just doesn't make sense. But most of the people who are in Indian spirituality and New Age spirituality, they're all Mayavadis. Even it's infiltrating Christianity. A couple of years ago, I was they had me give the Bhagavatam class in L.A. for a bunch of, the school, and they train the priests. The seminarians. A bunch of Catholic seminarians studying to be priests came to make their annual visit to the temple. Along with that, the headman is a scholar who likes us, Dr. Clooney, forget it. He came and he brought all of these seminarians, and so they had me take breakfast with them also, so we could sit and talk over the breakfast table in more informal atmosphere. And so I sat with about three of them at one table, and lo and behold, they actually were expressing Mayavadi philosophy. The conception of Brahman realization, they had actually embraced that concept, and they're Christians. They're going to be teaching Christian people the science of Christianity, and they were into Mayavadi philosophy. So when we say that the Western countries are filled with impersonalism and voidism, it's actually true. I know when I grew up as a little Christian boy back in the 50s, we had a very personal conception of God and Jesus. That Jesus was the Son and God was the Father. It was a very clear distinction. But then I noticed in the 70s, talking to Christians, when I started preaching as a devotee, they were all saying that Jesus is God. We never said that when I was a kid back in the 50s. This was Mayavadi philosophy infiltrating Christianity. This idea that Jesus is God himself. You see, when the spiritual master becomes God, it's Mayavadi philosophy. That happened in ISKCON too. At one point, Prabhupada gave sannyas to four of the young men back in 1970 in L.A. And there had been some influence from the God Brothers in India. To minimize Prabhupada's position as the founder acharya of ISKCON. So Prabhupada noticed that his name, founder acharya, was being admitted in the books. He could see various signs of this disease which was contaminating ISKCON. He was become very disturbed by this. In fact, that's when he formed a GBC body. He called many of the top men to L.A. He called Tamal Krishna Das. That'd be either Das Brahmachari or Das Adhikari at the time. I think it was Das Adhikari. He called him to L.A. He was so disturbed, Los Angeles. He said, get me out of here. He told Tamal Krishna, get me out of here. He was so disturbed by the atmosphere. And he said, where do you want to go, Prabhupada? How about Florida? He said, it's not far enough. So Prabhupada came to India at that time, actually, and Krishna arranged the wonderful thing to happen here. We got Mayapur, Vrindavan. It was Krishna's arrangement to bring Prabhupada back to India. But anyway, Prabhupada had been disturbed that his position was being minimized. And he left for India. So these four new sannyasis, they took the pendulum in the opposite direction. And they were saying that Prabhupada was God himself. We had minimized his position. Now we have to really glorify his position to make up for our offense. So now we have to say that he's God. Which is it's Mayavadi philosophy. When you say the spiritual master is God, it's Mayavadi philosophy. And it caused quite a turmoil. Prabhupada was gone to India and it caused quite a turmoil. The sannyasis came to New Vrindavan where we had a big festival going on. There was no Mayapur festival. Then it was a big festival every year in New Vrindavan. And you had to accept this or just get out of ISKCON. It was a heavy, very heavy time. And then Prabhupada got word of it. And he was so disturbed that these sannyasis were saying that he was God that he banned them from ISKCON. They weren't allowed to go to any ISKCON temple. They had to do penance of each going out to open 10 temples each. Separate up into four. One sannyasi this direction, they had to go individually, other by themselves. Each man had to go open 10 temples. That was his penance before he could come back and associate with ISKCON. That's how much Prabhupada was very, very strongly protesting that if you say the spiritual master is God, that they were banned from ISKCON for saying that. And we see some of these bogus gurus, just like this. Sai Baba, the leader of his international organization, directly states he is Krishna himself. You see, if the spiritual master is bona fide, he will never allow his disciple to say that he is Krishna. He will never. You see, they'll be banned, like these sannyasis were banned until they learn their lesson. So this Mayavadi idea that the spiritual master is God, and now if you've taken this process, you will also become God. It is the worst enemy of spiritual enlightenment. It has to be very, very solidly defeated. Very, very strongly defeated. And Prabhupada does it again. If you read these books scrutinizingly, you'll see again and again and again and again throughout practically every page of these books, Prabhupada is defeating Mayavadi philosophy. It's such a dangerous, insidious poison that prevents people from awakening the love of God. So, I can ask now if there's some questions. Yeah.
It's no question as such. It's as Shankaracharya when he brought in the Mayavada philosophy. Because at that point of time, it was Krishna's. That's what Krishna wanted, because there was no Hinduism in them.
Yes, yes.
It was almost dead.
Yes.
Because the whole thing was the Buddhism was prevailing at that time.
Krishna wanted him to do that to defeat Buddhism as a temporary measure. It was to bring the people of India back to accepting the Vedas.
And then Amanacharya and Madhvacharya,
then they carried it a step further. Just like in mathematics, sometimes and something that's untrue will be taught as a learning device at a certain level. Just like sometimes in a very early level of mathematics, the teacher will say, "My dear students, now we are going to learn subtraction. And in subtraction, you cannot subtract a number from a number which is less than itself." So that's a rule that is given sometimes because they don't understand negative numbers. They're too little for it. But as they grow up a little bit, then they say, you can do it. So sometimes a rule, a principle is given as a teaching device at a lower level. So in this way, Shankaracharya used it as a teaching device for people at a lower level, but it wasn't an eternal principle. You see? And he himself finally said, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Bhagavindam, Bhaja Bhagavindam Mudamate. You intellectual fools, your grammatical knowledge and word drudgery will not save you at the time of death. Simply worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda. But you know what? They didn't take to it because they liked the idea that I am God.
Yeah, that fact, they want to keep them alive. That fact wants to keep itself alive by following that practice of Shankaracharya still. That is the
took the first teaching, but they took what they wanted, and they didn't take what they didn't want. This is called Ardha Kukuti Nyaya. You know that Ardha Kukuti Nyaya? Half-hand logic? Yes. The followers of Shankaracharya were Ardha Kukuti Nyayis, half-hand logicians. There was one farmer, you see, and he had a hen. And that hen laid really big, nice eggs, okay? And he got a big price, many, many rupees for those eggs in the marketplace. And he was very happy with this. But he had one thing about the hen he didn't like. This hen eats so much. So he had this very bright idea. He wasn't a very smart farmer, but he said, I know what I'll do. I'll get rid of the end of the hen that eats big and just keep the end of the hen that lays the eggs. So he cut off the head of the hen. And he's sitting there wondering why the hen won't lay eggs anymore. He's such a stupid farmer. It's called half-hen logic. So the Mayavadi followers of Shankaracharya, they're half-hen logicians. They take the hen that lays the egg and not the hen that, say, eats the feed. That I am God is very nice, but if I have to do some service, if I have to serve the Lord, that's not very good. So therefore, they've killed their spiritual enlightenment.
But the role of Shankaracharya should not be forgotten, because he revived the Hinduism as per Krishna's plan.
Is that?
He said that we should not forget the role of
Shankaracharya is a pure devotee. He was just like when they build a highway, the first thing they do is come out and level the land, step number one, and they come in and put the concrete, etc. So he was part of the Lord Shiva, actually. It's Lord Shiva himself.
He
played an integral part in Lord Chaitanya's movement. He had to go in and he went in to clear out Buddhism. That was his, go in and clear Buddhism, get it out of the way, so we can come in, the Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, etc. can pave the road.
And certain people who reach Brahm Jyoti,
huh?
Certain people who reach Brahm Jyoti, they can still go, they can, only few of them, I mean, they're really transcendental, completely transcendental, they can reach Krishna again from Brahm Jyoti.
If one strictly follows Shankaracharya, they will attain the Brahma Jyoti, but it's only temporarily. But Tanti Adho, they fall down again into birth and death after some time.
This is what I've been taught here in ISKCON only, that certain people who reach Brahma Jyoti, they can still go up to Krishna from there.
It's possible.
They don't fall down.
It is possible. It is possible, but it doesn't generally work that way.
It could happen.
It is possible that somebody could go from Brahma Jyoti to Bhakti, but generally it doesn't work that way. Generally they fall down again. And that would be an exception to the rule. It could happen. An impersonalist. We do see examples. For example, the four Kumaras were realized impersonalists. They weren't Mayavadis. There's a subtle distinction. An impersonalist is someone who has advanced to the impersonal conception, but if he hears about the personality of Godhead, he's not envious of the personality of Godhead. A Mayavadi is directly envious and critical of the personal conception. You see, so there's a subtle distinction Theravada makes between Mayavadi and impersonalist. A Mayavadi is an impersonalist, but a personalist may not be a Mayavadi. Someone can advance to the impersonal level, like the four Kumaras, for example. And then by smelling the incense offered to the Lord, they can become personalist. Yeah?
In the Buddhist period, when the entire country transferred to Buddhism, they throw away the Krishnamurti from the temple. If you go to Badrinath even today...
What's he saying?
He said that in the Buddhist period, many places they throw away the deity of Krishna from the temple, and he's talking about Badrinath.
Oh yeah, but
I'm talking about the Badrinath now.
Vindicative.
I have gone to Badrinath. There the Vishnu Murti was thrown to Narad Kund for a long period during Buddhist time. It was Shankaracharya who went there and recovered that Murti and reinstalled. And even now, the people of his caste and family worshipping that murti. Even today.
He's saying that then Shankaracharya took it out from the Narad Kund, the deity of Badrinath, and he re-established the worship. And so even today, these people...
Yeah, his mission was to re-establish Vedic culture. He did that by giving an impersonal understanding of Vedanta Sutra, which was akin to Buddhism. And that way he was able to bring back the whole Vedic culture, but with an impersonal twist. In other words, the Buddhistic philosophy is everything is zero. The Shankara philosophy is everything is one. There's not much difference between everything is zero and everything is one.
He was not against any murti puja.
He's a great Vaishnava Acharya, he's actually a Vaishnava. He's Shiva himself. He's the greatest Vaishnava. But he had a mission to wipe out Buddhism so the other Acharyas could come and establish the personal conception. So we have great respect for Shankaracharya. He's Shiva himself, the greatest Vaishnava, actually.
Bhagavad Govindam is the last thing he said.
Any questions? Yeah.
As Srila Prabhupada said, purity is the force. So why are such people like Sai Baba, and they are all flourishing, they do not have purity of philosophy?
Yes. Why is it that the materialists sometimes flourish and the Vaishnavas are struggling to become established? Someone may flourish due to their past pious activities. I mean, Hitler also flourished, you see? So this is because of past pious activities. Someone may be able to flourish as a cheater. doesn't mean they're what they're doing is legitimate. It just means they have their packing some really good karma from previous activities, but they're burning it all up and getting rid of it. The Vaishnava may be struggling now, but his position is ever growing stronger because every day he's becoming more purified, he's becoming more connected with Krishna. So even though he may be struggling, look at Prabhupada, how many years he struggled. I said, so many years he struggled. Jhansi was a complete failure. He struggled like anything, but then, boom, the whole thing opened up like the floodgates. So sometimes we have to struggle in Krishna consciousness. We shouldn't be discouraged. The materialists seem to be more successful than we are. Actually, their success is illusory success. Our success, we are also successful. Our success is genuine. It will never be destroyed. Their success is illusory, and it will be very soon destroyed. Where are all the great big personalities now, you see? Prabhupada said they have all vanished into oblivion. Where is Hitler? Where is Napoleon? Have you seen that Paris in France? They have that statue of Napoleon is France and France is Napoleon. The statue is still there, but where is Napoleon, you see? France is still there, but where is Napoleon? You see, now he's some rat doing parikrama around the Eiffel Tower, you see? So they may appear to be very successful, you see. Due to their past karma, they have big position, you know, politician, movie star, rock star, famous scholar, famous scientist, you know, who says everything came out of nothing, Dr. Stephen Hawking. But it's all temporary. As soon as they burn up the reactions of their past activities, Purna Musika Baba. Everyone knows the story of Purna Musika Baba. Yeah. Again, you don't know? Again, you become mouse. There was one little mouse. And this little mouse, he had a hard time. Because it was a cat. It was very keen to eat that little mouse. Every time a little mouse stick his head out, the little mouse would look for some, there's some crumbs around the room. There was the cat ready to pounce on him. So one day the cat took a nap, completely zonked out, and the mouse made a run for the... There was a yogi in the village, a very powerful yogi. He made a bad dash for the yogi's hut before the cat could wake up. And he went to the yogi and said, Yogi, I'm being tortured by this cat. Can you do something to help me? He said, yeah, I can make you a cat. Would you like that? Yes. Poof, now you're a cat. Now I have no problem. I'm a cat, cool cat. I had no problems at all. I can just enjoy life. But then a dog came. Oh no. And he ran up a tree. Finally the dog left him alone. He went to the yogi. Now the dog's torturing me. What to do? Well, I can make you a dog. Yes. Dog. You see, now I have no problem. The cat won't bother me. The dog's not bothering me. But then a Bengali tiger came into the village looking for his lunch. There's a nice dog over there. So he made a mad dash for the yogi's head again. Now there's a tiger. What to do, yogi? I can make you a tiger. Yes, tiger. So now he's a tiger. Now, you know, the tiger, of course, he doesn't have to bother standing in line at the grocery store or cooking it or anything. He can just jump on it. But the problem is, when he goes for his lunch, what happens is lunch makes a mad dash for it, you see. In fact, Prabhupada explains there's a little bird in the forest. Sayu, sayu. When the tiger is on his lunch break, the little bird makes a signal and all the animals head for the hills. Mass exodus. The tiger is out for lunch. And they all head out and he has a hard time. Where's my lunch? My lunch disappeared. But now this tiger is sitting right in the hut with a nice plump looking yogi. He's sitting right there a few feet away from him. And this tiger gets a look in his eyes like, And the yogi is no dummy. He says, oh, you want to eat me? The tiger says, yes. The yogi says, Punar Musa Kabava. Again, you become a mouse, you see. So they may become very big gurus, big politicians, big rock stars, big athletics, big millionaires, big this, big nonsense that, or nonsense this, you see. But as soon as their karma is finished, Purna Muzaka Bhava again become mouse. But a devotee, he's simply building up his piety, his purity, and his shakti is building up life. Even if he has to take many births before he goes back to Godhead, his shakti is building up more and more and is never defeated by anything. His bhakti shakti is simply becoming stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. So he's never defeated by anything. He uses everything for his advantage to advance more in Krishna consciousness. It's like, I was amazed, how does somebody sail a boat when the wind is going the opposite direction? I looked it up and Googled it, and sure enough, there's an amazing thing. You can actually sail into the wind. I don't know how it's possible, but actually you can sail, you can go with the wind or into it. Either way, if I want to go from here, point A to point B, the wind can be going with me or against me, but either way I can go to my destination, according to some really incredible laws of physics. I don't know how the slight angle. They do it a slight angle, but they get there. They're able to go into the wind, at least almost into the wind. So the point is, a devotee, he can go straight into the wind because he uses everything he sees. He sees the hand of Krishna in everything, the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly, and he uses everything to help himself advance more and more in Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Yeah.
Every now and then in India, we hear that some person has been cheated in the devotional activity. So can it be taken that a person...
Where do you hear this, everyone?
Every now and then.
Every now and then you hear that somebody was cheated in spiritual life.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
that means it wasn't real spiritual life. It was pseudo-spiritual life. Real spiritual life means no cheating. If there's cheating, it wasn't spiritual life, it was material life. The only cheating is in material life. In spiritual life, there is no such thing as being cheated. That means they thought it was spiritual life, but it wasn't. It was actually material life.
So why does it happen with those people? Like, they went down to...
Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, this is a society of the cheaters and the cheated. So why is it that somebody becomes cheated? Because they actually want to be cheated. They don't want the real thing. Someone who actually sincerely desires to realize God will be led by Krishna within the heart to a bona fide spiritual master. He'll be led to Prabhupada's books. He'll be led to this movement. Anyone who is genuine, who doesn't want to be cheated, doesn't want some bogus, nonsense, so-called spirituality, anybody who wants the real thing will be led to this movement by Krishna within their heart. They won't be cheated. Now we have to make sure they're not cheated. We have to keep this movement pure. That's our duty. We're now the guardians of this movement. Prabhupada put it in our hands. So now we have to be very, very careful that we don't use this movement for our sense gratification. We have to use this movement to benefit the entire human society. That's what this movement is for. It's not for our sense gratification.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Yeah.
So I have a question, but before that, I want to comment a little bit
about the...
I have a question.
He's making a comment first, and then he'll...
Oh, okay.
So you're talking about the bogus gurus, no? So there is a big guru in India.
Yeah.
And he has a big temple close by, no? And he has a followers in the West Indies.
Many followers in what?
West Indies.
In West Indies.
He has many followers in the West Indies.
The West Indies, okay.
Especially the one who have plenty Lakshmi. No?
especially the rich people.
Huh?
Especially the rich, they are his followers.
Whose followers?
Kripalu.
Oh, Kripalu? Oh, yeah. We have him in Austin also. I'm familiar with him, yeah. He has a big thing in Austin, too, right in my backyard.
Yeah, but there is a special program in that country called Trinidad and Tobago. So there is a special program every year when there is many Hindu organizations, they go, you know, there in that particular place. The Hare Krishnas and the other organizations. So his place was in front of the Hare Krishna booth, you know. And I was there and I started to watch his video, you know, a nice video, nice temple. And they become Radha and Krishna. And after Radha and Krishna, they become his very ugly face between Radha and Krishna. And he said that he is Krishna, he said.
Now Kripalu is saying that he's Krishna? Kripalu says he's Krishna?
Yeah, yes.
Well, you know what happened to him? We had a famous rock star back in the 60s who he took a picture of the universal form. And he cut off Lord Vishnu's head and put his own head there. This was a fellow named Jimi Hendrix. He was a big super rock star for a while. They showed that album to Prabhupada. It was called Access Bowler's Love. His drummer and his bass player were the two expansions on either side. And Prabhupada said that he is calling death very near. And very shortly after that, one night in his hotel room in London, after a concert, he choked on his own vomit to death. He choked on his own vomit. He choked to death on his own vomit. So anyone who puts himself as Krishna, they are calling death very near. That's a thing. Very, very near they are calling death.
So the next day, they happened to him like that. The next day, he was in the second page of the newspaper with two police officers behind him, escorting him to the court because some lady went to report to the police that he was harassing her.
Huh?
That's happening in Austin.
Oh, in Austin?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm very, very familiar. This was Kripalu's disciple, Bhakrishananda Sarasvati. He started this big thing called New Barshana Dham in Austin back in around 1990. And very big. He had a letter from President Clinton. He had the governor of Texas. They had helicopters dropping flowers from the sky. He spent millions of dollars. It was an incredible installation of the temple. It was the Radharani temple. They called it New Barshana. And so people thought it was ISKCON also. Because we have people used to say, "Oh, you from New Barshana." So, but then recently he was found guilty in the court of fondling the breasts of some of the daughters of his disciples in a private darshan, and he didn't show up for the final court appearance. He skipped the country, and they completely purged him, his name out of the place. And they changed the name to Radha Madhav Dham. They totally purged him off their website. He was the big guru, the whole thing, and now he's completely purged like he never existed.
Huh?
All the sannyasis there were sannyasinis with long hair down to their waist. The sannyasi maharajas with long hair down. Sannyasi maharanis with long hair down to their waist, uncovered hair all down to their waist. It was quite a scene, the sannyasinis. He was surrounded by his sannyasinis. Yeah, and he was talking about Radha Krishna. He wrote a book saying that about Shikshastika. He did his own commentary on the Shikshastikam. He said, when Lord Chaitanya says there's no hard and fast rule for chanting, that means this japa is wrong. It's wrong to chant japa. In fact, when he came to Vraj, he said, what are all these people doing chanting japa? This isn't right. He found fault with all the Vrijabhasi sadhus who are chanting japa. He said, japa is nonsense. He's so proud. And then Radharani spoke to him and gave him this mission to spread Krishna consciousness. He called it his divine love consciousness all over the world. But his divine love is for the breasts of young girls, it turned out. That was his divine love. So yeah, these bogus gurus, they make a show. But the dog, you can put a dog on a throne, right? Give him a crown. But as soon as you throw a bone, he'll run after that bone. So you can give him a big title, Sannyasi Maharaj, making a big acharya of a big institution. But just give him a chance to be with a young, beautiful girl, a young, beautiful virgin girl in the private room and see what happens. A real sannyasi would never be alone with a woman. Never be alone with a woman. Yeah.
But he used to have all the sannyasinis
massaging his body. The sannyasinis were massaging him? Yeah. I mean, these people, and people thought he was great because he's allowing women to be sannyasis, so he's very good. I mean, people are just so uneducated now. They have no intelligence. The society is becoming more and more insane with every passing year, you see. Now they make no distinction. Now they want to legalize gay marriage everywhere, you see. They want to legalize gay marriage. That's the whole push in the U.S. to make gay marriage legal. But gay marriage doesn't make any sense. Because marriage is a license for sex. That's what it's for. And sex is only meant for procreation, according to Vedic principles. Any sex which is not for procreation is illicit. So you can't to gay marriage means you're licensing illicit sex, that's not bona fide. We can license legal sex between man and a woman for producing children. That we can license. But we cannot license sex which is illicit. But they have no, even the pious people who are in the so-called family values, they have no arguments to defeat this gay marriage thing. It's gaining momentum like anything. We're the only people who have the actual arguments to defeat it. The Christians don't have any arguments. They just say, well, it's not traditional. It's not the family way. You know, they don't have any scientific basis. We have a scientific basis of defeating these things. Prabhupada's teachings are so important for the future sanity of the world, even if they don't become devotees. Just to be moral, just to maintain basic moral principles, this planet needs to take Prabhupada's teachings as the guiding principles. Even if they don't become devotees, that's all right, but let them accept Prabhupada's philosophy as the guiding principles, and at least we can maintain some piety in the world, you see. Let 1% become, at least 1% can become actual devotees. And the 99%, let them accept the moral values given in these books. And then the world at least will have some sanity.
Even the Indian courts are not taking...
Huh?
Indian courts are also... I'm not taking this gay thing very seriously.
Was it?
He says even in India, the courts are also not taking it very seriously.
Was that?
In India, this gay marriage...
Oh yeah, it's taking momentum everywhere. Everywhere, gay marriage. Some people even saying we should allow it in ISKCON. Some people say, well, we allow householders to have illicit sex, so we have to have the gays do it too. But actually, our philosophy does not condone illicit sex for householders. I have an article on ISKCONstandards.com, ISKCONstandards.com, where thoroughly researches Prabhupada's statements about the standard of sex life for householders. You can look at that article up if you want. It's very clear, Prabhupada said sex life is only for procreation. That is our standard. So if we say sex, the householders can have illicit sex, then we have to facilitate the gays as well. Therefore, we have to keep our standard that sex is only for procreation. That's Prabhupada's standard bus. And then we can, on that basis, we can not allow gay marriage in ISKCON. Otherwise, we have to allow gay marriage eventually in ISKCON. Because are you not being fair to the gays? If heteros can have illicit sex, then homos should be able to have it too. You see?
So we hear of the yoga letter.
Hmm?
So does impersonal list also fit somewhere in the yoga letter, or how does they are related?
What is it?
The yoga letter.
Yoga letter.
Are the impersonalists also fit in the yoga letter, or they are different from the yoga letter?
You mean the Ashtanga ladder? Yes, they can take that yoga ladder and they can go to the samadhi state. They they can take yoga as a means of achieving, emerging into Brahman or becoming one with the Super Soul.
Are they on the yoga ladder?
Yes, there is the Ashtanga system. It can be adopted by impersonalist yogis.
But do we have to go step by step on the yoga
do
ladder?
Do we have to?
Yeah.
No. We go straight to the bhakti, the goal of the Ashtanga system.
We take the lift.
Yeah.
The elevator.
Yeah.
The lift. Yeah, we just hop on the lift, punch floor 108, boom, there you are. That's right. We don't have to. We immediately, Prabhupada said, just by taking prasadam, we would see perfection. Yeah, it's so nice process. If you just put faith in Prabhupada's words and follow what Prabhupada said, you can realize Krishna completely. You can become completely free of all the anartas. The first step, once you get initiated, then you got to focus on anarta nivritti, getting all the dirt out of the heart. Prabhupada said in a garden conversation in New Vrindavan, that up to the point of finishing anarta nivritti, it's a struggle, but after that, Prabhupada said, it's automatic. So the stages after anarta nivritti are nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prem. But it's like going up the hill, and then up and then zhoom. So once you've perfected anarta nivritti, it's hitting the top, and then it's a downhill glide from there on. So we really should just embrace that struggle, the anarta nivritti. The endeavor to achieve anarta nivritti. Nivritti means cessation. Anarta means all the unwanted dirt in the heart. So we should struggle like anything to clean all that dirt out of the heart in the anarta nivritti stage. And because after that, the final, remaining purification will just take place automatically, Prabhupada said. So let's focus on anarta nivritti.
That's what is not happening.
Huh?
That's what is not happening. Anartha Nivritti is not happening.
Yeah, we're holding on to our anartas. It's called, my dear old anartas, how I love you, how I love you, my dear anartas. That's the problem. I love my anartas. They've been with me for millions of lifetimes, my dear, dear anartas. That's the problem. We're attached to those damn things. So we have to kick the boot, the anartas. They say, get out of here, you rascal. I just want bhakti now. I'm sick and tired of serving you. I just want bhakti. Nothing but pure bhakti from here on. So, anything else? Everybody satisfied now? Ready to kick out the anartas with boot?
That's why we are here. That's why we are here.
Yeah.
Just to kick the anartas.
That's why we've come to Vrindavan. Yeah. That's why we're here in ISKCON. We want to get rid of these damn anartas. And the torturing is long enough. The lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, illusion, the pride, the laziness, the arrogance, the stupidity. It goes on and on and on. Humongous list, you see.
Complacency.
Huh?
Complacency,
yeah. Complacency. Yeah, I'll become Krishna. Just like Sarasvati would tell, she was here in Vrindavan, she would tell some man, I'm going to tell Prabhupada you're smoking. And he would say, I'll give it up by and by. So, complacency. Yeah, I'll give up my anartha someday. Someday, somewhere over the rainbow. not today. Today I'm going to keep him. Maybe next year, next lifetime, give up my anartha. So we should understand these anarthas are doing nothing but causing us anxiety and misery. Your misery is not the external situation that you're in. Your job situation, or your health, or your age, or your relationships. The real cause of anxiety is simply the anarthas that we're holding onto in our hearts. That's the real cause of whatever anxieties we have now. It's simply due to our anarthas. So kick out those damn things. And let's kick him out and achieve that state where he can just kind of glide in to home base, you know. After the third plate, it's just kind of like gliding into home base. Okay, yeah?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, sometimes these anarthas, they're like vices, like somebody who is like an addiction in the heart.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And even though you want to kick them out, even though you do everything,
you're controlled by them.
And they're still there.
I know.
It's like a drug addict who wants to do it, but this addiction, you know, it's like forcing the person to do.
Yeah, isn't it a fact? It's an absolute fact what you're saying.
What is your advice for this situation?
Yes, you have to introduce some new addictions. Rupa Goswami says the ultimate addiction is the addiction to Krishna. So, somehow become addicted to Krishna. That's the key. Because Krishna is more attractive than illicit sex. He's more attractive than, false egoism or anything you might enjoy in this material world. Krishna is more attractive. So somehow or another, get a taste for Krishna consciousness. You know, when you chant your japa, try to really get into it. That's on a practical level, on a daily basis. Prabhuji, that's what you got to do. That's what we have to do. When we chant around, we got to really go try to get deep, deep, deeper than we've ever been before, you see. Now, let me feel how Krishna is present. Prabhupada said to Vallabhi, my god sister, when you chant japa, just feel the presence of Krishna. So we should really try to connect with Krishna. Krishna is real. He's not some fable or some fairy tale. He's as real as you or me. And he's right here, right now with us, but we're so dulled out by these anarthas, we can't see him. So we just have to try to take advantage of his holy name, which is the means by which he is accessible. If we take advantage of that, I mean, even a gross example like the internet. The internet's right here in this room, everywhere. But you have to have a 3G stick and the password, and then you can get in, you see. So, this is your 3G stick and your password. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare. When you connect with Krishna, you're connected with everything. And there's no pleasure which can replace it. It's the ultimate pleasure. So somehow or other, you know, rise early in the morning, take bath, decorate your body with tilak, put on a dhoti, put on a kurta, go to the Mangal Arati, worship Tulsi Devi, try to go deep, deep, deep into every activity of bhakti, everything qualitatively. And by that, you'll penetrate through these coverings and gradually start to get a little taste for the sublime nectar of bhakti rasa. And that will completely, as that taste begins to awaken within your heart, you'll become disgusted with all these other things. That's how it works. You can't just walk away from it like the Mayavadis try to do. You can't walk away from material addiction. It doesn't work. You have to replace it with a better addiction, Krishna. And that's the key. Any other questions? Yeah.
In this devotional service,
yeah.
Hold it away from your mouth. It's too close.
In the devotional service, what they said that Krishna is in the heart in the form of Narayana, Chaturbhuj Narayana.
Yeah.
So you should focus on Narayana while chanting.
No. Prabhupada said to focus on the sound of the name. Prabhupada told us, when chanting japa, the focus on the sound of the name. That's because everything is there. The Narayana within your heart is present in the name. That Narayana who is sitting in your heart, he's also present in that vibration, Krishna. You see? Every quality of Krishna is present in these two syllables, Krishna. Every pastime of Krishna is available in these two syllables, Krishna. All the forms of Krishna, Ramadhi Murti Shokalana Nimayana Tishtan, all the different forms of Krishna are present within Krishna. The Narayana in your heart, the Narayana in my heart, the Narayana in every single atom scattered throughout all the material, all the universes, that they're all present within Krishna. So focus on the two syllables, Krishna. That's the instruction.
Here itself, in one of the lectures, I was told that you have to concentrate on one form of Krishna.
This is called Shabda. The form during Japa, we are to concentrate on the sound form. Do you think the sound is formless? The sound is the form. What is the injunction in the Brihadnaradiya Purana? What form we should meditate on in the Kali Yuga? Hararnama, Hararnama, Hararnama Iva Kevalam. The sloka does not say Hararupa, Hararupa, Hararupa Iva Kevalam. The meditation, the Kali Yuga, is on the name. It's not on a form. Form is the Dwapara Yuga. That is the age of meditating on the deity, is the prime function of self-realization. In this age, we meditate on the name,
this,
Prabhu.
This is what I told at that time. I think Mataji must be remembering that Naam
is the ultimate form.
Naam is
the ultimate form.
This is what I said.
Naam is the ultimate form.
This is what I said, but I was told, I think Mataji will remember it, that I was told that you have to go up that personal service. You have to concentrate on one form.
That form for us is Nama.
So you get
Nama Rupa, the Nama form. That is the Yuga Dharma, Prabhuji. Nama. Hadar Nama. That is the Yuga Dharma in Kali Yuga. The focus on the name is the prime meditation, not something else.
This is what I also said at that time.
Okay, so now he's saying what Maharaj is saying.
But I was told.
Okay, I understand you were told something, but Prabhupada is our authority. Anybody can say anything they want, and sometimes devotees preach things that aren't true. Do you know that? You know what, sometimes in ISKCON, you know what Prabhupada said? He said they say so many things, so many false things. Prabhupada said this and Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that. I have a quote, that's a letter, okay? I didn't make it up, it's a hearsay. And I have an actual letter. I have a copy of the exact wording in the letter. Prabhupada, there are so many false things in ISKCON. Prabhupada said this and Prabhupada said that. So just because somebody said something in a class doesn't mean it's necessarily true. You have to read the books and see what Prabhupada is saying. Sometimes our devotees who are not well trained will say things that are in the class that are not true. Don't blindly take things you hear in the lectures. You have to confirm everything in the books. Otherwise you'll be spaced out.
Sometimes you do get disturbed.
Sometimes neophyte devotees preach things which are not according to Prabhupada's books.
You don't have the time to read all the books.
Well, Prabhupada said, all of my disciples have to read all of my books or they'll fall down. So do you want to fall down or not? Well, I'm not a disciple, I'm a grand disciple. Oh, wait a minute. Grand disciples are also disciples. We're all Prabhupada's disciples in one form or another. So we all have to read Prabhupada's books. Our Prabhupada said, every one of my disciples has to read all of my books or they will fall down. So you better find the time to read the books. Eat less and sleep less, but read these books. Because otherwise, you're going to be confused. You have to, when I joined this movement, I was skeptical. Well, I know that these devotees, they're not in the level of Prabhupada. They might say something untrue. So I would hear the classes. I had 7 classes a day when I joined. It was pretty nice. Vishnujana Swami, 7 classes a day. Can you imagine? And we went on Sankirtan twice, in the morning and the afternoon. And we had 7 classes a day. And it was really ecstatic with Vishnujana Maharaj. But anyway, I was skeptical, even with Vishnujana Swami. I mean, I was a complete skeptic. And I said, well, I'm not going to accept anything as authoritative until I read it in Prabhupada's books. But as I read the books, I said, yeah, these devotees are doing a good job. Their classes are good. This sounds okay, but let me confirm it in the books. That's what I would do. I wouldn't accept something as gospel until I saw it confirmed in the books. And I used to write Prabhupada a lot of letters to get things confirmed as well. I have many letters from Prabhupada. So, read the books and get it confirmed. Because sometimes devotees, neophyte devotees, or even senior devotees sometimes make mistakes. I mean, look, there were senior devotees who said that Prabhupada was God at one point in ISKCON. Senior sannyasis said that Prabhupada was God. Completely bogus thing they were preaching. They were sannyasis. So, don't take things blindly. You have to read the books and see what Prabhupada is actually saying, and then you won't be confused. So I think our time has been kind of wearing out the clock a little bit. Oh, you have one last question? Okay, go ahead.
How to remain in determination always?
How to remain?
In determination. Determination.
How to remain determined?
Yes.
It's very simple. You have to remember our the spiritual master of us all. We have one Siksha Guru who is the Siksha Guru of determination. You know, she is the little sparrow. Yes, she is our Guru. Our Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharani. A little sparrow. Yes. Because the nasty ocean stole the egg of the little sparrow. And that little sparrow was very determined that I will dry up this ocean and get my eggs back. She said, give my eggs back. The ocean said, no, you can't have them. She said, well, I'm going to dry you up then. She was taking one little drop, one mouthful of food depositing on the land, going back down, more water, dropping back. And everybody was laughing, oh, look at that little stupid little bird. She's going to run herself to death before she makes any significant dent in the ocean. They were laughing. But there's one bird who's the big brother of the little sparrow, and his name is Garuda. He's the king of the birds, and he's the carrier of Lord Vishnu, who possesses all mystic power. When he realized how they were tormenting his little sister, he wasn't too happy about it. And he came there with great anger. He came swooping in, in front of that ocean. You better turn those eggs back right now. I'm going to dry you up. And the ocean immediately knew, I have no choice. And Garuda can destroy me within a minute. So you have to be determined, that little sparrow. And knowing full well that Krishna will cover for you. And whatever way you're lacking, Krishna will cover for you. You just be very, very determined to do your duty to please Guru and Krishna. And if there's any trouble, Krishna will presently come in and protect you and defend you. Okay, so we'll stop here. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai Srimad Sankarsana Sadhikari Prabhu Ki
Jai.